This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
They've done it! They have done it!
Still with Lee Gregory. He's in the box. Tries to screw it. Is it going to be there?
Yes!
Oh my word! It's in!
You're listening to the number one pod for Sheffield Wednesday. This is the Wednesday Till I Die podcast.
3 points away, ole, ole. 3 points away, ole, ole. Just when you thought there was no hope, just when you thought we were down and out, the club have that ability to draw you back in. It was a trip down to the capital, the last one of the season, and it finished QPR 0, Sheffield Wednesday 2. We come away with 3 points, and with it keeping our survival hopes well and truly alive, with just 5 games to go. Hello and welcome to the Wednesday Tie-Dye podcast. I'm James Mappin. Alongside me this evening is Matt. Matt, is there a better feeling than coming away from the capital with all 3 points?
No, absolutely no better feeling at all this season. I seem to have been the resident London away days podcaster for the back end of the season here, and we've won 2-0 on both of them, so it's a positive. But that was hands down best away day of the season. That was unbelievable, not just the result but everything about it.
Before we get on to the game, how are you, mate? You all right?
Yeah, I was in a bit of I'm not going to lie to you, James. I was in a bit of a pickle on the train on the way back. I was really, really struggling on the way back. I spent £20 on some burrito before getting on the train on the way back and 2 litres of water. But by the time I touched back in Birmingham, I was that dull ache of a hangover was firmly setting in.
Yeah, well, it's normally a sign of a good day, in it, really. I'm a little bit under the weather, I'm not going to lie. So I will try and mute myself if I'm going to cough. But if I don't get there in time, I do apologise. I was in the hospitality this weekend, which was made for a nice change. Got a message on Tuesday from one of the listeners who wishes to remain anonymous, but just said I've got a ticket on Saturday if you want it. And I like did a quick VAR check with the wife, and check complete. So that was a green light to get down to London on Saturday. So yeah, it was all good. I'm going to, on extra time, we are going to talk about the hospitality, and I will share the full experience of yesterday. So if you want to listen to that, do check Patreon out, patreon.com/WTID pod. Right, let's just get straight into it because I'm buzzing after a win. It doesn't happen very often, does it, this season, especially not winning away. So let's get into it. Before the game, Matt, I'm not sure how I felt, because deep down, I always thought that we could do it. There's always one team that does something kind of stupendous in a season. You know, you look at Notts Forest, they were bottom and then they got promoted. You know, there's always a team that does something like that. And I feel like the team that's been in the bottom three since the second week of the season, it's kind of like us to be that team when it never, ever, like never is, other than last season with Peterborough. But everyone was so downbeat, you know, and almost given up, especially after Plymouth beat Rotherham, which, come on, like that was to be expected, really. We can't really say anything else otherwise. But, you know, all the group chats, all the social media. I was considering whether I've just been a bit kind of naive to it all, but I don't know about what you thought.
Yeah, I think it was because it was so bad on Monday. It's not just the defeat, it was, I think, the manner of the defeat on Monday, which I know obviously you covered on the pod last week. It was that manner of the defeat which kind of makes you as a fan. If you go there and you get beat 2-0, but you've put in a good showing, you've had a lot of good chances and you've nearly nicked something, yeah, fair enough. Okay, I think any fan can stomach that. The manner of the defeat was terrible. And I said it a couple of weeks ago, the idea of any result at this point of the season with how important the individual games are in sort of like their own little microcosm does sway your mood, both hugely positive and hugely negative.
Yeah.
A Swansea game that we should have got something from, realistically, we should have taken all 3 points. Middlesbrough, we got taught a lesson, and it leaves you feeling very, very flat going into a game where QPR, who were in, let's not beat about the bush, QPR are in exactly the same position as us around January, February sort of time, and have put such an outstanding run of form together. They've not only been consistent throughout since the turn of the season, but they've been consistent since then. And so up to yesterday's game had sort of dragged themselves away from it enough to the point of they probably need one more win and they were safe. And I think that was just symptomatic of the way they played yesterday. Because I know we were saying before, it did feel all a bit on the beach vibes from QPR yesterday against a side who looked like they'd had, to be fair to them, an absolute rocket over the course of this week and had a long, hard look at themselves, both as a coaching staff and as a playing staff, and thought, right, if we are going to go down here, we ain't going down without a fight, because that's just not. And I know there's been a lot of questions of character. I've done it so as well. But it was really, really good to see yesterday that level of performance put in.
Yeah, kind of going into the game, I was just, like I said, I wasn't confident that we were going to get the win. I think I'm just confident that we're going to get out of it. But game on game, you look at this one, you know, QPR were in decent form. We were in decent form previous to the Leeds game. Since then, 4 games and only 1 point to show from it. So from on paper, it looks pretty poor. And I suppose QPR would have, you know, liked the fact, if they just even looked on the Sheffield Wednesday hashtag, they would have been, you know, licking their lips thinking, hey, look, this is pretty straightforward, this one. And, you know, are they safe? I don't know. Like, we're going to talk about kind of the bottom of the league at the moment, because it is very, very close. The rubber band elastic starts to stretch, but it's not broken. It's just twanged back again, hasn't it? Because they've all come close, and, you know, there'll be some teams looking over the shoulder, because before you know it, a couple of bad results and they could be drawn in. There's a lot of teams that are still playing teams around us. We've got to go to Blackburn as well pretty soon. So, there's a lot of games that are going to be huge 6-pointers. Were you confident that we could get something, or were you going in more hope rather than expectation, Matt?
I'll be honest, James, I've never seen us lose at QPR, so I was quite positive. I've never seen us lose at QPR, and I didn't really fancy breaking that stride yesterday. The old tradition of getting into London and then a tube over to Shepherd's Bush and then straight into Belushi's outside Shepherd's Bush was broken, however, yesterday, because Shepherd's Bush station was shut. So it was carnage. So it took a load of delayed trains and all the rest of it, to the point of when my dad nudged me when we were starting the tube, and he went, oh, fuck this, let's just get a cab. As it turned out, cab was about 4 minutes and cost 15 quid.
Christ.
But it was worth it. But it was worth it. But yeah, I think I went down thinking, I think it was just the level of the importance of the game. I went down hopeful, because let's be honest, I don't think anybody is in that bottom half. I'd probably go from Preston all the way down to us. I don't think anybody in that bottom half is in particular good shakes.
No.
Anybody can beat anybody on that day, and anybody who can string a run together can get themselves out of it. And I did go down thinking, yeah, okay, you have to win today. But yeah, I was positive and confident in us being able to get a result. Did I think it was going to happen in the manner that it did? Probably not. No, I thought it was going to be a lot more tense, a lot more cagey, a lot more sort of... I didn't think it was going to be an open and free-flowing game, but I thought it was going to be chances at a definite premium for both sides.
Yeah.
And it didn't it didn't feel that way in the ground, I suppose.
Yeah, a lot's been said about kind of how we've bounced back this season, you know, after the Huddersfield defeat. All right, we didn't really bounce back after the 6-0 against Ipswich, although the performance was a lot better against Swansea than it was against Ipswich. So, you know, based on that, you know, there were people saying, look, we do tend to respond to a bit of a rollicking. So, yeah, I was a bit... I felt like it could go either way. I think I said in my prediction, 2-0. My heart was saying 2-0, and I think my head, or maybe 2-1, I think I said, and my head was just totally the opposite. I thought that, you know, maybe they're going to have a bit too much, but I was hoping that we could turn a bit of a corner. Starting lineup then, 5 changes. In came Iorfa, Palmer, Smith, Perveda and Windass. Out went Johnson, Volks, Masaba, Kadamatra. And I've got written down here, Perveda again. It wasn't Perveda, I think it was Valentin, weren't it? I know, I seem to get them too mixed up when I'm writing things. Because I go to type Paul and I just end up putting Perveda. Anyway, they were the changes. So it would be Lingol, Iorfa, Diaby, Hekwa, Femewo, Palmer and Bannon, Perveda, Ugbo and Windass, and then Smith up top. I've got it as a 4-2-3-1. Sometimes it were a 4-2-2-2. I'm not really sure, but what did you make to those changes? Because Danny clearly not happy with the performance on Monday, and you know, to make 5 changes and some of the players that have been omitted as well.
I was surprised to see Michael Smith start. Is the honest answer, based off Kadamatra at Swansea played really well. I thought he had a horrible time at Middlesbrough. He was so isolated, but that didn't necessarily mean that he should have been dropped yesterday. But it was something that kind of surprised me. I will give him plenty of praise later, but I will give you my initial 2 o'clock reaction. I was surprised again to see Bambo Diaby starting in that kind of back line. And that's not because of his recent performances. It's more to do with how we've seen him over the season. You've conceded 2 in your last game. I was just surprised again to see him in that starting lineup again and not see more changes. Femewo out to left back, we've seen that plenty of times this season. I don't think it's particularly worked well. Especially at the start of the season in particular, where he seemed to be getting exposed weekly. That was something that I was concerned about if you were looking at doing a rotation with Chair out wide. Aside from that, I was very, very pleased to see the return of Perveda and Windass both to that starting lineup.
Yeah. I was shocked with Windass, I'll be perfectly honest, just because Danny Mill tends to, they go on the bench first and then they come on for 15 or 20 minutes or so and then probably play the next game. So it was, you know, Windass hasn't been on the bench at all this season. Well, certainly since he's had his recent injury. So yeah, I was a bit surprised. Although, yeah, a bit surprised, but I can see why. You know, I think he's tried to make a point, you know, and he's been, he said in his post-match press conference as well, when he was asked about the starting lineup, that, you know, that about attitude and things like that. And I think he has made a point with certain players that, you know, Monday wasn't acceptable. I think one thing as well with Danny Rill, you know, a lot of people talk about managers going off feel, especially more traditional managers, and, you know, seeing things with their eyes, whereas Danny Rill very much is data. So I'm guessing if you've not done your running, if you get off that pitch and you've not done X amount of kilometres for like 90 minutes, you're going to get a bollocking, you know, and or certainly go down in his estimations because you've not done what he's been asking of you, kind of thing. So, yeah, I think there's no hiding, let's say, when these... With Danny Rill.
No, I agree. I think one of the things that I think makes Josh Windass a prime Danny role player at this particular point in time is his ability to carry out a coach's instructions. Yeah. Now, that might leave us all in the stands thinking, what on earth is he doing? Why, you know, why is he cutting back inside here? Why is he not going to receive the ball? Why is he not sticking out wide? But one of the things that every single manager who has had Josh Windass at Sheffield Wednesday seems to utilise him for is something that is a bit different from everybody else. Not that he has a free role, that perhaps he has a slightly separate role away from the team where it's not just dictated around shape. It's perhaps, there was times in the first half where he would drop and let Femewo spin around the other side of him.
Yeah.
And that would, you know, like those types of players, somebody who has clearly got a very intelligent football brain is at a premium and has been at a premium and will always be at a premium for a side who are down the bottom of the Championship.
Yeah, he said he loves football, didn't he? And you can tell. I mean, there's some footballers that actually, believe it or not, don't even like it. They don't, you know, they get asked the question, "Oh, have you watched the Man United Liverpool game?" And they're like, "Nah, I kind of switch off," which I can get. When I say that, I don't mean any sort of Sheffield Wednesday players in particular, but just other footballers in general. But yeah, he's one that he watches all the football. He's very, very keen, has a very detailed eye, doesn't he, with all the instructions like you mentioned. Johnson, he was very poor on Monday. There was a clip that I saw on Monday's game where Firmino points out a player to him. I can't remember what player it was. I think it was Latir Lath, I think. He points him out like way before in this move. He just ignores him. He doesn't even look at him. And then, you know, jogging back, and then the ball comes to him, and thankfully he puts it wide. Obviously, it didn't make any difference to the scoreline or anything, but that was kind of one thing that had been pointed out. Danny Rill said, when he got asked the question of Marvin Johnson, is he injured? He said, "We had some small problems, but I will not speak about Marvin today because this team fights and has the right attitude." Can we read anything into that, mentioning attitude or anything like that? Because I know his wife's come out and said that he was ill, which doesn't match up with what the gaffer's seen.
No, it's something that has been constantly, I think, levelled at Marvin Johnson ever since he arrived at Sheffield Wednesday. And I think it's been levelled at him his entire career. I don't know why he was missing yesterday, and I wouldn't sit here and say, "Oh, it's definitely this," or I've found this out or anything like that. Because from my perspective, I'm obviously a lot less connected to than someone like yourself, and it's all just stuff and speculation. One of the things that I think is super telling from that comment is he skirts over the issue. He doesn't mention an illness. He doesn't mention anything to do with his reasoning. He just says, "I will not speak about the player today."
Yeah, it's one of those, isn't it, where if it's just an innocent thing, you just say, "Oh, he's picked up an illness. He's picked up a stomach bug. He's got the shits," or whatever. Correct. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can just get around that question so innocently, and nobody's even going to bat an eyelid if that's what you say. And then that's it. And then you move
the question,
on.
Yeah, the question. Yeah.
But by saying, "I'm not going to talk about it," almost kind of makes it into like a bigger thing.
Yeah, the silence speaks volumes. I mean, don't get me wrong, at the start of the season, I was very big on pushing for him being back in the side. I do think it was the right decision to recall him. I still think he's got, the highest amount of assists for our team currently? So anybody who wants to discredit or discount his value to this side need only look at that and think, right, he's done a fantastic and amazing job for us since coming back.
He's got 7 goal contributions, 3 goals, 4 assists. Only Anthony Mesaba has got more with 9. He's got 6 goals and 3 assists. There's no other player in the team other than Mesaba with better performance or kind of end product, let's say, than what Marvin Johnson's got, which I think is why as a footballer, he's probably so frustrating. You know, when we're attacking towards the cop end, he's right in front of me, and so I can see, especially when we're at home, a lot of the time he's in my eye line, and I've mentioned a few times he's so frustrating because of that. Like, it looks like he's not interested for the first 45 Correct. Minutes, then all of a sudden he puts an absolute pearler of a ball in, and you score a goal, and you're like, well, that's exactly why you have Marvin Johnson on the pitch. He's just but I think for me. Look, again, like you, I don't know, purely speculation, but one, I'm much more inclined to trust Danny Rill just because it's Danny Rill, for starters.
Yeah, agreed.
And two, he had troubles with Sisco as well. Now, look, I think I would have had troubles with Sisco, to be honest. But, you know, when you look at previous players that have problems, you know, when you look at Sam Hutchinson and Westwood, you know, they had problems with two managers. Nobody else had any problems as well. Do you know what I mean? There's just a bit of like a pattern emerging. So look, I could be putting 2 and 2 together and getting 7, but that's just my, you know, we always like to give opinions, and that's just my opinion matter.
And that's it. I agree with you. I think also in terms of if we're going on the subject of opinions, I think his body language is appalling. when he plays for Sheffield Wednesday. I think he's, I'm not suggesting that he's not invested or that he's not trying, but I would suggest his body language screams 1,000% exactly what he's thinking at every single moment. He appears always to be an open book Marvin Johnson in the same way that Barry Bannon is. When Barry Bannon's angry, you can tell.
Yeah.
When he's positive, you can always tell. The exact same with Marvin Johnson. You can tell at times over, highlighting the last 6 weeks in particular, he seems to have been incredibly frustrated with James Beadle in goal. He seems to have been incredibly frustrated from whoever the other central defensive partner is, that they're either not tight enough or that he hasn't received the ball from them. He cuts a very frustrated figure at times. Now, people will speculate whether that's to do with an Ipswich move that fell through or whether that's to do with contract disputes or whatever, whatever. I personally just believe it's just him as a footballer and what he has to do to get himself in the mood. He needs to play. He strikes me as the type of player who needs to play angry.
Yeah.
He needs to be annoyed at something or somebody to play well. Having said all of that, his performance at Middlesbrough was appalling, and he deserved to be dropped whether he was fit or not for it. Because flat out, the second goal comes from his side, and I know it's a corner and I know that there's a lot of players. It's inexcusable to have the type of performance that he did, and then for us, if he was fit, to just expect him to go straight into that starting 11 the following week. Danny Rule was absolutely right after the game in saying that I wanted a team that I knew would be together. I think Marvin Johnson's great, but I also know that he is one of those type of characters, just from seeing him for what, the past three seasons at Hillsborough. When things aren't going right, he's not going to put his arm around somebody and try and encourage him. He's going to continue to berate him, because that's what works for him as a footballer.
Do you know what I think killed him? I think that the second season in League One, so last season, the first kind of five or six games, every goal we conceded came down his side. And then I think the games after that, he just almost went into his shell and just didn't attack and just focus more on his defending. Obviously, we got a bit better, but then we didn't see the right Marvin Johnson. And I feel like from that point onwards, I don't know if he's just like lost that ability to go forward, because he's constantly thinking about what's behind him, or I don't know, but I feel like from that point he's just changed. But look, like we said, you know, second highest goal contributor, he certainly has an impact on the team. But I think now, when you're in these final six games, obviously now it's only five, you need someone that's going to need the team to fully buy in, and obviously we needed a reaction from Monday's game. And I thought we got it, you know, wholeheartedly. You know, the running, the chasing back. Like, for me, the difference was really visible. There were times where, you know, Bambo Diaby would like miss a tackle or he slid in and he's on the floor, whereas normally they'd just get up and just trot back and get back into position. There was one where Firmino did it as well, and I think he'd come out of defence and missed the tackle or missed the header or whatever it was. It was weird. It was almost like they went to do what they would normally do, and then they thought, fuck, I can't do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, just to trot back. And then they thought, shit, I've got to leg it. Like, so it was almost like, and you could see they were proper sprinting back. And I think one of them, Firmino, actually then ends up putting the tackle in. I think someone covers him. Firmino comes back and they double up and we come away with the ball and everything. So yeah, for me, the reaction was certainly visible.
Yeah, I think the reaction from the 11 who started and also every single sub who came on was absolutely, it was absolutely not only needed, but it was impeccable. It was the exact right attitude for what you'd want to see. One thing I will say, I do think this side need backs up against the wall to do that and have that type of a reaction from them. We saw it when, again, I'm referring back to Millwall away. I personally thought had we lost to Millwall, we were dead and buried. I know that seems a long time ago and a lot's happened from there, but the position that we were in, I thought if we'd have gone to Millwall, they were on a terrible run of form, hadn't seen a performance. We did. We won 2-0 and that sparked us onto a five wins in six. We've then had a bit of a lull where we'd brought ourselves back into it. Another win would have taken us out of the drop zone. We won one game in March.
Yeah.
We're now at a position where you have to win. You have to get results now. And I know we'll speak about it later, but the upcoming fortnight could be the season, realistically. It could be the season in that upcoming, you know, Tuesday, Saturday, Sunday. That could be the season, just because of the nature of the teams who you're playing. The reaction from the squad yesterday including obviously the subs, was unbelievable. Really outstanding, exactly what you want to see. And ultimately, there were no passengers on that pitch or any of the subs who came on, which at times over the last month, for all of the brilliance that I've said about what Marvin Johnson's brought, he has been a passenger over the last couple of games. Yeah. He has not been to the standard he was when he was playing freely, when he came back from his all-expenses-paid retreat to Dubai. he's been outstanding when he came back in that initial spell, got goals, got assists, looked free. As you said, looks terrified at the minute to break forward. I mean, the goal at Preston that he scored, where the flick on from Cadamarchi came and he's in, he's clean in from halfway. I know teams don't give us that kind of like free rein these that I'm saying that. We've just scored a counter-attack goal yesterday. But, you know, he hasn't had that desire and that will to drive. Now, whether you want to put that down to a transfer rumour, whether you want to put that down to contracts, whether you want to put that down to whatever, that's an argument for another day. 100% the right call to not have him playing yesterday.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just got to touch on QPR for a second, because I think, like we've already touched on, they were pretty much on the beach. You know, they have got some decent players, you know, Willock and Chair being just two of them. You know, we can say what you want about Chair and whether he should or shouldn't be playing, but he's playing, so we've just got to deal with it. And talking about dealing with it, I thought we dealt with both of them, you know, pretty well. And, you know, like I said, I thought QPR had that mentality that they could just turn up and beat us fairly comfortably. And obviously that didn't happen. I mean, I thought our game plan was to do what they did, as in, let QPR have the ball. You know, the way that we set up in terms of having Smith, I thought we were going to go a little bit more direct, kind of have him to hold up the ball. I think QPR kind of forced us into doing the opposite. A bit like, I said it earlier, a bit like when we used to play Wickham. I think that's the time where we beat Wickham at their place and we let them have the ball. And they, you know, they were a team that had like, you know, 25% possession, weren't it? And we let them have it and they didn't know what to do with it. I think that's what QPR said to us, because it's weird for a team at home to relinquish so much possession. And it was almost like, go on then, you have a go, kind of knowing that we'd probably fuck up. And then they could, you know, nick a couple of goals and it'd be, you know, look fairly comfortable. Because like in that first half, after about 15, 20 minutes, we just seemed to have all the ball. I mean, yes, we didn't really do a great deal with it, but, you know, and it was a, it looked a bit, you know, backwards, sideways. But, yeah, I thought it was fairly, I was quite happy with that, even though we went in at 0-0, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely. If you go back to that Middlesbrough game, first 10 minutes, it was very end-to-end. It was more like a basketball match, that first 10 minutes, than anything else. And then Middlesbrough settled into a passing rhythm. And now, don't get me wrong, they were only 1-0 up at half-time to a deflected goal from a corner. But they settled into a passing rhythm, got themselves in kind of like stride, got the team kind of clicking together, kind of trying to develop some of their patterns of play. QPR seemed to sit off us yesterday and say, yeah, I mean, have a go, see if you can do that. Because if you do break, you know, Chair and Willock, like Chair, as I've said before, I think he's one of the best wingers in the division, irrespective of his legal ramifications outside of football. Chris Willock's been outstanding for them recently as well. He's been a really, really good player for them. Anderson, who plays in that sort of 10 role as well, good player. So they clearly were trying to hit us on the break as well is it Sinclair Armstrong who plays up front for them, holding the ball up and kind of like getting in around the box and laying it off for players. One of the things that I thought we did really well yesterday was start to dictate that possession with Liam Palmer at the base of that midfield, which, I'll be honest, I wouldn't have taken Volks out. I think Will Volks is not necessarily my type of player, and I do think, you know, further on down the line there needs to be a conversation of who goes into that midfield and who plays there. But I don't think I'd have taken him out, because one thing that Will Volks does do is he does retain possession really well.
Yeah.
Liam Palmer came in, sat in front of that back four, and if it wasn't on, he didn't play it, and just made sure that we retained the ball and kept it moving.
Yeah, do you know what? I think I called it last week, or maybe the week before. I said, go back to basics. I mean, it might have been last week after the Middlesbrough game where there were the stupid flicks, and I just kind of went on a bit of a rant, and I'm like, just go back to basics. Pass and move, little triangles. And I felt like we did that. Like you said, if it wasn't on, we didn't try it. Yeah, it makes for pretty boring football, but you know what? Right now, we're 6 games to go. Like I said, 5 games now. I don't care how we said, don't we? You know, I don't care if it's 1-0 off someone's arse. Well, it nearly was that for the first goal, wasn't it? You know, to be fair. And look, we're not complaining. We don't really care. Like, it could be anything. We just want the results. We just want to stay in the Championship. And I do feel like we did go back to basics. And one thing that was good as well, totally different style of play that we've seen before. So when you're looking at the manager, you're looking at, you know, has he got the credentials and can he do it and can he change it up? He's shown today that, or yesterday, sorry, that he can play a little bit different and can still get a result.
Yeah, agreed. You could, for everything that he got wrong against Middlesbrough, you could say he got exactly right yesterday at QPR. He did everything to a T yesterday and the team carried out the instructions perfectly. What was really clear, I thought, yesterday was that every single player to a man understood exactly what their role was yesterday.
Yeah.
There seemed to be no confusion. There seemed to be no... at times, as you said at Middlesbrough, no over elaborate kind of like trying things that aren't ever going to come off and trying to play 1-2s around a corner with two players who've never really played together before. It was all very much right. You know what's asked of you. You know what's being required of you here. Just stick to that and this will work.
Yeah. Before we talk about the goals, Windass. Oh, how the hell has he missed from there? I mean, I've watched it about 1,000 times. I mean, it's a long ball from Bannon to Poveda out on the right-hand side. I mean, Windass has done absolutely everything right. He peels away from his man at the back post. You know, the ball comes in from Poveda. Fantastic ball. I actually think the ball's going in. I think if he misses it, he's got a good chance of just nicking in at that far post. It seems, well, I don't know what it hits. His thigh, no idea what it hits. Doesn't even go out for a goal kick.
It's shite and it's shite. There's no other way of putting it. I mean, the move's brilliant. The ball from Bannon to hit Poveda in stride is what, 50-yard diag over the top. Poveda's touch, it's coming over his shoulder and manages to kill it dead in front of him. Squares his man up, beats him once, beats him again, crosses it. As you say, probably going in the far post, but you always want that runner coming in round the back. Josh Windass, unmarked, 1 yard out, trips over his own fucking feet, comes off his knee. As you say, those are the ones where you sit there and think, I'll just hit him and it's him.
Yeah.
Just hit him and it's
clearly
him.
Not.
That theory is disproved right by that fucking miss. Because that was appalling. It was terrible.
He nearly goes behind him, like when he hits it. Do you know what I mean? Like I've no idea how he's done it. And I mean, I don't know whether he hurt himself or not. I mean, I would have probably feigned an injury as well.
Yeah, I'd have been throwing my arms at rolling and wrangling.
Sub me off, ref. Yeah. I mean, at that point, I thought this is going to be it, isn't it? This is that just summed up our season so far. You know, that kind of can't even score from a yard out, and yeah. But I mean, thankfully, it didn't.
I was just about to say it's a good job we fucking won, because can you imagine the abuse that he'd have got if we hadn't?
I know.
You'd have just seen that on replay over and over and over again. And it's, I think, really telling when you watch the highlights back. You see him miss. None of the QPR fans who were directly behind it really react to it. But you see everybody in the goal where it's like a top-down view. He's like Wednesday fans, all arms go up and then straight on heads. Yes. And everyone's standing around going, how the fuck has he missed?
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, I jumped up thinking he scored. And then, well, as I said, jumped up. I couldn't really jump up, obviously, being in the home end. But,
posh seats, yeah, posh seats.
Yeah, padded seats, yeah. Bit of leg room. Another thing that happened in the first half, pen or not a pen? I have to say,
no.
Yeah, at the time, I thought it was borderline, and I actually thought the ref had given it when he put his arm out from where the ref was and where I was sat. I was like, he's fucking pointed at the spot there. Like, get in. First penalty of the season.
I'll be honest, James, I was sat just to the left of it. So I was stood just to the left of it, and it was clear that it was outside. Yeah. His fall had taken him in, and it was, don't get me wrong, it was close, and I was screaming anybody as loud as anybody else in the stadium screaming it's a pen.
Yeah.
When he picked himself up, you could clearly see the mark on the pitch of where it was, and it was a tackle that probably needed to be made, because up until that point, who was their left back who was playing yesterday? Is it Kenneth Paul? He'd had a torrid time from Jan Poveda. Yeah. He must have been thrilled to see the back of Jan Poveda. Absolutely thrilled. Because
he taught him a new arsehole, didn't he?
Yeah, any time he squared him up for the first half an hour, took him apart. Gassama come on and picked up exactly where he left off. he did exactly the same in terms of he goes about it in a different way, but did exactly the same and would beat him every single time and run at him. And the minute he got the wrong side of him, I think he just thought, no, I've got to make a challenge here. But that is our season for penalties in a nutshell. Half an inch or a blade of grass outside of it, you ain't getting it.
Go on then, five games to go. Are we going to get a penalty? I mean odds are you're going to say not, aren't you, really?
Not a chance. Saying that now, there'll be a fucking penalty on Tuesday.
I can just see it now. Soccer Saturday, last game of the season. Wait a minute. And these are, let's go to the Stadium of Light. These are penalty. Ashley Fletcher steps up.
Oh, God alive. But yeah, I don't think we'll get one all season. And I don't think it's through lack of trying. I think it's because of our style of play. Our style of play doesn't appear to have many players in the box who square people up and take people on, aside from Gassama and Poveda. One of those is potentially out for the remainder of the season.
Yeah.
When he come off, he looked absolutely distraught when he come off. Shirt come off, head in hands, all of that. Big consoling hug. The only other player who really takes players on in a box and actually has the ball under control that ever appears is Gassama. Everybody else is very much like an arriving runner or arriving onto the ball. I just don't see us getting a penalty all season.
It's funny,
unless it's somebody who literally picks it up.
Yeah, it's funny though, because I was looking the other day and I was looking at, like, why aren't the midfielders scoring? And I had a theory that we just don't score don't shoot from outside the box. So I had a quick look at the stats, and it's exactly that. When you look at shots outside the box, 35% of our shots come outside the box. Actually, looking at percentage, it makes it look a lot better, because obviously we just don't have many shots.
It doesn't sound too bad, does it? But when you actually think about where the majority of our goals come from, it's really clear that we get in most of our chances wide.
Yeah.
And then hit the ball into the box. And we're not looking for headers or anything like that, because it seems ages since we scored a bloody header as well. But it's zipped in balls, and it just either has to come off a striker and they just tap it in, or it is a ball across where somebody cuts in and hits it. There's not much opportunity, I would say, for players to be brought down really in the area, because all of our contact in the box, it always feels to me, is very much either first time hit or one touch and hit.
Yeah. I'm just looking at all penalties. Leicester, 12 penalties they've had this season. Well, they've scored 12 penalties. Sunderland are the next with 6. Obviously, we've got none because we haven't had a penalty. Blackburn have also not scored a penalty, but they have had one at some point. Just while I'm looking as well, own goals. Cardiff have got the most own goals, 4, so they're quite lucky. Ipswich have actually got the most, have scored the most own goals, 6. They've scored this season. We're up there. We've scored 3 own goals this season. Obviously, as early as last week with Michael Ahekwa, although it's a bit, it's a bit shit for that to go down as an own goal, and it really is. At least you bounced off him. But let's. Well, I'm going to talk about the goal, but just another thing I picked up on in that first half. Daft yellow cards. Now, from that penalty incident, Windass is furious. He thinks it's a pen.
Yeah.
He's gone tear arsing over to the assistant and giving both barrels. Gets a yellow card for dissent. Stupid. Then Palmer. This one is even better for me. Mm-hmm. It's a free kick for whatever. I don't know if it's a foul or whatever the free kick's been given for, offside or whatever. And he like picks the ball up and carries it about 3 yards further forward and puts the ball down as if to say it's from there, not here. And he gets a yellow card for that. And I'm thinking, fucking like, right. I mean, look, it didn't matter because neither player got sent off. We won the game 2-0. It's all fine. I'm just like, I find it so frustrating that for me, you've just got to not do that. You've just got to let it go because you get yourself too worked up. And then, I mean, my fear was Palmer is likely to be that player that, once if QPR bombing forward, he'll just give him a quick tug, the professional foul. And before you know it, you could be down to 10 men. And the thing is, with that point in the season where that could be the difference, do you know what I mean? A red card at a point in a game where you don't need it. I mean, you don't need a red card anyway, but do you know what I mean?
No, but yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I do take the point. I suppose I would look at it in terms of isolation of what happened at Middlesbrough to what happened at QPR. I would much rather see what we saw yesterday from players in terms of Windass screaming at officials and begging for this. Palmer doing, you know, it's a very minor dark arts, but picking the ball up and running 3 yards and then getting booked and then chucking it back because it wastes another minute of him being put in the books, he's run away and then come back. I'd much rather see that than it's been used a lot on this pod, that apathy phrase of like it, amongst fans, but also definitely at Middlesbrough, it felt like the game passed them all by.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they didn't care, but it definitely looked that way. It looked like they'd just got a tank in. I'd much rather see players doing that. And I agree with you, and I take the point on at any point at this time in the season, it's so crucial that you have a full available selection of players to come back, because there will be players who, you know, can make a difference. So you didn't necessarily expect it. Christian Pedersen yesterday is a prime example. It come on for 10, 15 minutes and I was immediately thinking the worst because of how bad he's been. I was immediately thinking the worst. He's going to have a winger running at him. He's going to end up bringing somebody down. He's going to do something. But he came on and played his part. So I do completely take that point. But I would much rather have a side that is a bit nastier and a bit more in your face, because I do think there have been times this season where we've just been too passive and just gone through the motions, and we haven't had that level of I was about to say a Chris Wilder phrase then of passion, but we haven't had that for spells throughout the season.
Yeah, I think we've been too nice at times. I think we have been like that for the last two or three seasons, definitely. Yeah. But yeah, you've got to have that bit of grit about you. You know, a bit more of Will Volks and Patterson.
100%.
That's what
100%. Yeah, 100%. Just before you move on to the goals, James, I would just like to give a big shout out to the QPR bar staff at half time, by the way, because all of the tills went down in the concourse at half time. So whistle blew. I went downstairs thinking, right, I've got to soak myself up here. I need a rollover hot dog and I'm paying 12 quid for it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Went down at half time for it and every single till was out. Every single till was out. Not one of them working. So I will give a big shout out to the two QPR bar staff who basically just flipped both beer taps on and went, yeah, cool, and just handed cups out to people. So people were leaning over, just filling their own boots. I ended up with a pint of cider I didn't want. It was chaos. It was absolute chaos down the back of that. Newcastle fans would have been having a fit, but it was absolute chaos down there. But it was hilarious at half time.
Just on that then, before we talk about the goals, the ground in itself, Loftus Road. Yeah, I felt like it was, you know, obviously the stand I was in, the concourse. You know, I think our concourse on the north stand is narrow, but God Almighty, it's a bit tight. Like, you know, and like you said, you know, we have a hissy fit. You know, we have to shut seats off. But you see other grounds and you think, you know, that is, I went down at half time and it was cozy, let's say.
Yeah, Cozy's putting it very nicely. It was really, really compact there, and there was times where a lot of other away grounds, they'll open the back doors up. So Watford's a prime example. Watford weren't serving drink at all, and the concourse is really, really compact at Watford. So it's, I don't know, maybe six people side to side deep if you were to go from front to back before you get into the stand, because it is literally road stand.
Yeah.
There's not much room at all. They've got their brain switched on in that they open up doors at the back and just let you spill out onto the pavement. They barrier off, obviously, all the pavement and just steward it outside. So you get a load of overspill of people who are coming out and then just go outside, even if it's, whether it's for a smoke or whether it's just for some fresh air or whatever, and they just go outside. So it just eases up mountains of space. QPR at the end of the game yesterday, they had these huge big swing doors that opened up and you could just go straight down the steps and you were barricaded in by a big barrier anyway. So you could have just locked it off easily. Yeah. It'd have made a ton of sense, but it was literally, you were hemmed in down the back. So yeah, cozy and snug is the friendly way of putting it. But I will give a shout out to the Honesty Bar that was put on at halftime by QPR for Wednesday fans.
Yeah, great stuff. Yeah, that was good. Right, the goal then, like I mentioned before, we got lucky. But we'll take it. I mean, what wasn't lucky was the great work by Gassama down that right-hand side. You know, again, showing kind of what he's got in terms of potential and what he can do. You know, you know, we've mentioned a lot of times being, you know, a 10 and then a 2 in terms of level of performance. Yeah. But I thought, you know, like you mentioned, he came on, all the subs did well when they come on. Gassama, I thought he had a fantastic game, very positive. And yeah, got to the byline, quick feet, danced around the players. When I'm watching it, I'm thinking, surely he's going to get tackled at some point. I mean, there's that clip, isn't there, from the QPR fan that's banging line in line with it, where he's going, ah, well, I can't remember what he's saying now, something like,
fucking, yeah, how's he fucking got through there?
Yeah. And, it's brilliant. But yeah, he gets through. Obviously, he loses the ball, but yeah, we eventually get a bit fortunate. They've tried to clear it, and it comes straight off him and snuck in that near post. I mean, keeper's no chance. You're not even expecting it to go anywhere near. It was just like a massive sigh of relief. Because I think at the time as well, I think Birmingham, I think they were losing, or they might have been drawing, but I think they were losing. I think Huddersfield were drawing as well. And I look at it and thinking, come on, like, let's go. You know, you can't say we didn't deserve it. I don't want to say it was an even game. I think we probably shaded it, to be honest, when you look at it, you know, if you take your blue tinted glasses off. I think we were good value for the goal, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think in the first instance, Dom Iorfa does really well to chase it and stop it going out of play, because I know he can get to it, and he does end up getting to it comfortably. It would have been very easy for him to jog, make a token effort and just see it out and everybody get back into shape. But he does really well to keep the ball in. Finds a very, very simple pass to Gassama, who's got his back to goal, does really well in squaring his man up, beats him, takes him back, beats him again, puts him on the touchline. The biggest thing, as you've highlighted there, is the second effort, because the ball in from him, let's face it, the ball in from him is fucking terrible. The ball in from him where he's trying to find a pass is absolutely awful. He's overrun it, he gets a toe end on it and just smacks it into an area, rather than just kind of like once he beats the player, just drilling it across the face of the goal. I'm going to beat somebody else, I'm going to get a shot off here. The touch is appalling. The following in of it and the closing down of it is something that I do think we wouldn't have seen maybe at the start of the season from him, in terms of brand new to English Championship football, very different to Ligue 1 and the league that he's been playing in before in terms of under-23s football. That desire to go and put his foot on it and try and get a block in, even if it goes out for a kick, you get a huge roar from the away end. The fact that it snuck in the bottom corner was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And it's one of those goals that we just don't score.
I bet that away end were brilliant, weren't it, as well, when that went in?
It was good fun. I'll be honest, it was good fun. It was good fun in there. It was a lot of fun in that. When that one went in, there was... So I was on the... As you were looking at it from the seats, was... I was far right, closest to the QPR fans. So I was right in the corner.
Yeah.
And immediately, it always pisses me off when people do it at Hillsborough, but I got swept up in it yesterday. I blame it on Guinness. minute that the goal went in, everybody who was that side just rushed to a stand closest possible to get to QPR fans.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Everybody just tearing forward. And then you realise that actually you're shouting at a 70-year-old bloke in a sombrero here. So... We'll all just give this a rest for a bit, shall we?
Do you know what? I mean, obviously, I know, like, you know, the hospitality seats and everything aren't just always, you know, home fans. You know, there's a few away fans, and I think they openly let you, you know, buy tickets in there and what have you. But still, I felt like I had to be a little bit careful. When the goal went in, you know, the guy I was with, like, gave me a nudge, and you're like, yes, get in. Didn't really say anything. I mean, look, I don't think as an away fan, but me personally, I'm just a massive giveaway. Like, because even if you don't celebrate the things for Wednesday, like, you've got to at least celebrate the things that for the other team. Yeah. Like, when there's a chance, and it's gone close, and they're all ooh clapping, and you're just sat there in silence. Like, they must thinking, what the fuck's he support? Like, has he not seen what's happened? Like, what's he doing?
On that note, if you look on the highlights, when Gassama goes to the far corner and he starts celebrating, he stops in the corner, and there's everybody giving him like fingers and all the rest of it, bar one elderly woman, I won't say old lady, elderly woman who sat there just clapping her hands together like that. I was pissing myself when I saw that.
She's a Wednesday fan in the home end, infiltrated the home end, you know.
Clearly, it was so funny. But yeah, the away end was, I mean, we touched on it right at the start. I thought it was the best away end that I've been in this season. And I've been in a few, not all of them, but I've been in quite a few this season. It was outstanding yesterday. And that goal was that goal just sent everybody into a tailspin. And from there, it was a party. It was a nervous party. Let's not pretend everyone wasn't on edge like it was 4 o'clock in the morning and afters. But it was very edgy in there. But it was, for those 10 minutes after that goal went in, it was non-stop, constant, and it was really, really, really positive.
Well, I put that tweet out, you know, the meme of the, you know, it's over, we're back, we're so back, and then, you know, it's over or whatever. Let me find it.
The four faces that
the circle meet. Yeah, it's so over, we're back, we're so back, and it's over again. It just goes round, and that is literally us this season. Certainly now, anyway, because, you know, it's that close. It feels like a defeat is the end, and a win is, well, exactly. We're back, and I think I put we're back, and then obviously when we won, we're so back. Obviously, there were a few people that replied by saying delete this, and you're going to jinx it and everything else. But I mean, because obviously when you tweet something, you know, it does have a direct influence on, you know, what happens on the
pitch. It makes a massive difference what time style I walk through on Tuesday night as well. So it makes a huge difference, honestly, I'm telling you.
Are you a superstitious person then, Matt?
Everything aside from football, no, I think it's all fucking ridiculous, but I can't not walk through the same turnstile before every game. It's so pointless. It's so pointless.
I know. Before we talk about Masaba's goal, they got very close, you know, the width of a crossbar to be exact. The Lucas Anderson, who you mentioned earlier, had a chance. He had all the time in the world on that left-hand side. I thought it was in, not going to lie. I thought, you know, when he hit it, I thought he's just going to dip it over Beadle, but, you know, he's hit the bar and gone out for, hit the bar, came down, and then went out for a goal kick, which I thought just defied physics. But I think I've looked back and I think Beadle actually gets a fingertip save to it as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. From my vantage point, I was dead in line with where Anderson took the shot from. In real time, couldn't see if Beadle got a touch. Just thought it was a terrible miss. Just thought he got underneath it, just too underneath it. It's one of those where you just need to wrap your foot around. I'm speaking like a play. You need to just wrap your foot around.
Prime R9 here, you know.
Just stand up, bury, whip it round the keeper and just wheel off in front of him. No, it just looked like he'd leant back on it just a touch.
I don't know if you watched football earlier today, but he should have done what Kobbie Mainoo did for Man United against Liverpool.
Yeah. It's what you taught as a kid, isn't it? Get your head over the ball and make sure that you keep it. You keep it down.
Yeah.
He seems to be leaning back a touch in terms of trying to lift it over the keeper. Now, I will say this: if James Beadle does get a touch to that, it's an absolutely outstanding save because he has no right to get to that ball at all. If he does manage to get a fingertip on it, I thought it had gone out for a goal kick. Clearly, so did the referee. But it does appear on kind of like replays, and there has been a lot of noise today saying that he has got a touch on it. If he has got a touch on it, it's such a vitally important save. And he has quite rightly received a lot of stick for his distribution and his kicking. But again, I will continue to stand on this hill until the end of the season, until he's not a Sheffield Wednesday player anymore. I think he has improved our goalkeeping department massively since coming in January.
Yeah.
It may not have contributed in some of the drubbings that we've taken, but I would argue that we have taken more points with him in net than without him in net.
But you know what as well? Rightly or wrongly, you know, Dawson gets criticism from the fans. And I think sometimes you've just got to just hold your hands up and be like, it's just like, for no fault of his own or whatever, you know, if fans just aren't on your side, you know, just by bringing a different goalkeeper in who could be better, you know, could be better, might not be as good or whatever, you just have that perception, and then also, you know, it can breed confidence and, you know, confidence and like level of ability, you know, they go hand in hand, but they're totally separate. But they are separate. So, you know, and someone who's got more confidence can play better than someone that's got a better ability. And you know, I'm not saying that either player's you know, better than each other or whatever. But I just think sometimes, you know, you have got to think, right, actually, yeah, Dawson, there's a lot of fans that don't like you. He makes a mistake. Everyone's on his back. Let's just get him out the firing line. Get someone else in and you know, it could change your fortunes.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I think as a Sheffield Wednesday fan base, definitely in modern era, we have been spoiled out by goalkeepers. Let's be honest there. Chris Kirkland, irrespective of what you thought of him, was a good goalkeeper for us when he played for us. That was followed by Kieran Westwood, who is arguably one of the best keepers that we've had since dropping out of the Premier League in Chris Wood or Kevin Pressman. He was an unbelievable Championship goalkeeper
Lee
for
Grant,
us.
Lee Grant, I go back to him as well.
Lee,
yeah.
Lee Grant's another fantastic example.
Kevin Pressman, if you go back even further, yeah.
Yeah, we've had a few of them. We've been in a little spell for the past couple of years where, the COVID season where we continued to play Joe Wildsmith, who clearly wasn't up to scratch. Mm. We then went into a season with Cameron Dawson, who got absolute dog's abuse left, right and centre, rightly sent out on loan, brought in Bailey Peacock Farrell, who had a lot of mistakes in him and ultimately probably contributed in us ending up in sort of playoffs rather than sort of challenging really seriously for automatics. To then last season where we had Stockdale, who came in and calmed everything down and played really well. Cameron Dawson, who then when he did eventually take the shirt, played well, had mistakes in him, started this season with no other option other than Cameron Dawson. Davis Vasquez was a good keeper, but not suited to English football. To English football at all. I don't care what anybody says. If you're on the books at AC Milan, you're a good goalkeeper. Yeah. He was not suited to the English Championship way of playing football. And even in goal, it's more than just standing net and save a few. You still have to know how to play, what's going to be expected of you and what your areas of strength and weakness are. I think since Beadle's come in, he has been a much more steady presence for us in goal. Yes, we've still got drubbins, but he has also contributed, like yesterday, in making vitally important saves at important times to make sure that we either retain a lead, take a point, whatever.
Yeah, just looking at Davis Vasquez, he plays for Ascoli Calcio. He's only made 4 appearances since joining them. Fairly recent ones as well. I'm guessing their goalkeeper must have got injured because he came on for 16 minutes. So actually, it says he's got 2 clean sheets, but that's a bit of a lie because he only had to...
What?
Yeah, it's one really, which was the last one. Venezia, which everyone goes mad about their kit, don't they? Like,
yeah, every year they do like a really nice one.
Yeah, yeah. But I think the people now just like it because everyone else says it's really good. But anyway, that's for another one. Yeah, wrapped it up at the death. It was proper, you know, squeaky bum time, you know, when we were 1-0 up. I was thinking, it's just the Wednesday way that we're going to concede a goal and other results are going to go, you know, not go for us. I think, you know, obviously right at the death, Huddersfield got a goal to beat Millwall, which is like, fuck's sake. I think Birmingham had equalised against Leicester at some point as well whilst we were leading. So you're thinking, come on, like, at one point I thought it's going to be all the teams around us. Obviously Plymouth had already won as well. I thought, we're going to win. And all of these other teams, that are, you know, nearby are also going to win. And we're literally just not going to move again and not be any closer and thinking, fucking, like, it's just not going to be our season. But yeah, it was I can't remember what happened, but the ball's in the air. Callum Patterson, who's come off the bench, another one who's come back, available for selection. I do think we've missed him, and I think he's going to be vital in these next 5 games. It's just the type of player that you need when you're going to be battling for points. He wins the header. Jadon Kasama and Anthony Mbasaba do exactly what I thought they were going to do. You know, this goal is just what, when we signed them and we found out that they've got this pace, I thought we'd be doing this week in, week
every
out.
Week.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I thought we'd score these goals every week. But yeah, Kasama picks the ball up, runs, and then you see Mbasaba, he puts the afterburners on. I don't think the QPR defenders remotely asked to chase him. You know, it's when on the 96th minute, I think it was. Great ball from Kasama, perfectly weighted as well, just outside the reach of the QPR defender. And do you know what? I'm going to give some praise to Mbasaba because he goes to hit it, and if you look, he delays it so the ball comes across him a little bit more so he can get it around Begovic. And I think it's a fantastic finish. You know, I know the game was all but done at that point, but just the icing on the cake of just a fantastic performance.
Yeah, I know you say the game was done, but it definitely didn't feel like that, did it? For any of us yesterday, it didn't feel like that. QPR were throwing as much of the kitchen sink as they probably did all afternoon at us. They were getting the ball out wide, trying to load the ball into the box. I think just before the goal went in, they'd had a couple of chances from kind of corners and crosses into the box with players heading the ball over. You know, the half chances, but they were still mounting pressure. Mm. When the ball's cleared and Callum Patterson wins the header, one of the things that I think I agree with you, I think he's really important for the running. I think because of his attitude, because of the type of player that he is, I think one of the things that is really good from him is he doesn't just aimlessly head the ball straight up into the sky. He heads the ball over the top of the defensive line into that space. Gassama does actually really well to almost bend his run and get himself back onside. It was something that I mean, anybody who stood around me yesterday would have heard me screaming for, and I've been screaming for it for a couple of weeks, why we don't just, if we've got two players with pace, why we don't just leave one of them stood on halfway, especially at 1-0 up, because it's going to draw at least two, if not three players out from the area, and it's going to make sure that that team has to think about a ball over the top. Because when we all come back, so we were doing it yesterday, every corner there's 10 men inside our area, 10 Sheffield Wednesday players inside our area. We've proved all season we are shit at defending from set pieces.
Yeah.
We are terrible at it. What difference does it make to have a kid who's, I don't know how tall Gassama is, maybe 5'10", 5'11". What difference does it make to have him stood on the halfway line? Yeah. I'd much rather have him there and bang balls up to him so he can go and chase them. Patterson wins the header. It's a great run. It was. I thought the ball from Gassama, I will be honest, I thought the ball was an interesting choice of ball because he chooses to go with his right foot, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He chooses to go with his right foot and it's the instep of his right foot. I've got no idea how he passes that ball with that kind of like level of accuracy, and the finish from Masaba is outstanding, absolutely outstanding. It's a difficult skill to get it up above a keeper with that much pace on the ball as well, because he's running at full tilt. He stutters, but he's still going at a real lick. To hit it first time, to get it into their ice, absolutely outstanding goal and a perfect way to cap a 2-0 win away from home. 94th minute, counter-attack break after you've been under a bit of pressure. Oh, yeah, absolutely brilliant day. But again, bedlam in the away end.
It's one of those it's one of those fire drill goals, isn't it? You know, that goal was in. Everyone, up they get. Out the door. Yeah. That's it.
You can hear the seats clattering as everybody gets up. Yeah.
Yep. That's it. Game's over. Game's done. Finished. You know, and it's just like I said, he just capped it all off for me. And it's nothing worse than those final few minutes where you're just like, oh, you know, come on, hold on. But no, they did it. You know, back to the wall. It was tough at times, but I think you know it was. It was exactly the performance that we needed. And it just shows you how we're just on a knife edge as a fan at the moment in terms of, you know, lose on the Saturday and it probably would have been curtains, you know. I mean, we're on 42 points. We would have been 4 points adrift, 5 if you count the goal difference. With 5 games to go, you know, you've got to...
It's too much.
It's not good enough, is it really? You know, as it happens, it's a point. All right, 2 with the goal difference, and it's just one game. You know, as it has been most of the games this season. You know, we can't not in recent weeks, should I say, we can get out of the bottom three at this opportunity if results go our way. So I feel like we've just got to stay as long as we can stay within shooting distance. If things don't go our way, as long as we can. Yeah. Just stay with that, keep that gap as low as we can, then,
you're right, you say, James, it's 4 points to 16th. It's 4 points to 16th, and we have to play 2 of those teams in the next fortnight. Let's say, for argument's sake, you beat Stoke and Blackburn. They are right in the mire with you, right in the mire if they're not already now.
Well, the gap to them is 4, so we beat them. You know, if we match their results in the other games, the gap's now 1. Like that is how mad it is. Like it's crackers. We're going to touch on the bottom, not 3, bottom 9 or whatever it is in a second. I'm just going to read some of the 3-word match reviews out, then we'll talk. I know you want to talk about Bambo Diabe as well.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with 3 for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Read some of the three-word match reviews. Do follow us on Twitter, or X as it now called, at WTID Pod. Ben Martin had a hunch. Nick Clapham said, don't stop believing. Matt Glossop's gone for points over performance. Chef Cam, he's gone, it is on. Yeah, Neil Dunn, bounce back ability. I think that's one word, that, isn't it? Surely. Who was it that said that? It was Ian Dowie, weren't it?
In Dowie.
Bounce back ability. Brilliant. Wes Morrissey, delighted for Danny. Matt Scholey, 3 humongous points. Big 3 points, more effort, thanks. Another one, don't stop believing. We're still alive. Bambo Pocket Sinclair. We are going to be talking about Bambo in a second. We go again. Kept on going. Never stop believing. I think there's quite a lot of people that stop believing. But now we're back on again. Winning capital, Plymouth shitting it. Yep, we're going to talk about the bottom teams in a second. And then Richard has gone with up to .. 23rd. And he's got the meme saying, well, it's Groundhog Day again. Yeah, it does feel like that this season. Like we win a game and we just do not move from where we are. I'm looking, we've been 23rd since the Coventry 2-1 defeat. So what's that, a Boxing Day?
Jesus.
We've actually been 23rd since the Stoke win. We moved from bottom to 23rd at that point.
What, start of December?
Yep. And then we beat Preston. And then that meant we moved up to 22nd. But then when we got beat 4-0. Yeah. But then we got beat 4-0 by Southampton and then dropped back down to 23rd again. So
That's better. Let's get us back to where we belong.
Yeah, comfortable. I mean, we've been bottom, haven't we, since match day 8 and the 3-0 defeat to Swansea. We were bottom until beating Stoke.
Which is, I mean, it's just... there. I was reading something earlier. There's no other side. I can't remember where I read it. I should have screenshotted it just for this. There's been no other side in the second half of the season or other than Watford, I think, who have taken more points than us from the second half of the season.
Yeah.
It's mental how many points that we have had to take to go from 23rd to 23rd. Yeah. It is bizarre, isn't it? It is absolutely bizarre. And any other season, sides that put this level of a run together, ordinarily you think, oh, they've done really well to get out of that. Look at them sat in mid-table.
Yep.
It shows you, I know we've gone back to it a number of times, it just shows you how poor it was at the start of the season, wasn't it?
Yeah, really bad. Let's talk about Bambo Diaby then, because I know you said at the top that you look at him when he starts and you think, yeah, you have a few question marks, but he did everything that he needed to do, I thought, to be honest.
Can we extend Ramadan all the way through until the end of May? Is that a possibility? It's honestly, Ramadan Bambo Diaby is the best version of Bambo Diaby I think that anybody's seen.
Yeah.
I put a tweet out to this effect yesterday. I have given him so much stick over the course of the season.
And I think rightly so. And you know, let's be honest, I don't think you've been the only one. I think there has been some poor performances from him. So I think you're banging your rights to criticise some of the performances.
I know a couple of people in the past couple of weeks have been a bit more, I would say, forgiving than him. But I would suggest that I am swayed by bias of previous performances. And also, he's not my type of a centre-half. I like a centre-half who is similar to... a Michael Hector type of style centre half. I want a ball player and somebody who can win things in the air as well. Yesterday he was absolutely unbelievable, and for me a clear man of the match yesterday. He took Sinclair Armstrong apart yesterday for a striker who is, I know, 19 and has clearly probably got quite a bright future in the game.
Yeah, he looks decent, to be fair.
And he took him apart and pocketed him. It was the most complete performance I have seen from him at centre-half all season. He didn't seem to lose a battle. When he did, he slowed him down enough to allow another covering defender to get back to him. When he was out of position, there was one, I think it was first half, where a ball was played into a channel for Sinclair Armstrong to run onto. And I thought, uh-oh. He's squaring him up here to go inside of him. He's about 30 yards out, and it's a half touch too far in front of him, and Bambo nicks in and clears the danger and allows everybody to get back. He won battle after battle in the second half with him. He got him to the point where he was so frustrated. Every time he went down, he was throwing his hands on the floor, smashing the ground, begging for free kicks. He was brilliant yesterday, Bambo Diaby. So, yeah, I mean, if we can see performances like that from him through until the end of the season, I've got no problem in him starting every week until the end of the season. But I do caveat that with, we have seen a lot of evidence to suggest that that is more a small sample size than what he's like as a footballer over the course of the season. But if he provides that for the next five, I've got no problem.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Gassama and Windass, but in interest of time, I think we'll probably do that on extra time, because I want to talk about the bottom of the table and how that is at the moment. As you mentioned, 2 points separate 23rd to 19th, which is, you know, we're on 42. That's obviously 44 points. 4 points separate to 23rd to 16th, which is Blackburn on 46, and 5 points separate 23rd to 15th, which is Swansea on 47. Then there is a bit of a gap to Watford, who are at that. They've broken that magical 50 point barrier. But it's mad how 50 points with five games to go only gets you, you know, 14th in the league. You know, but yeah, well, you think you'd be a bit lower down than that, but I mean, if we win on Tuesday and results go our way, we can go up to as high as 19th, which is absolutely mental. I don't think that's going to happen for 1 minute, but that's how close it is down at the bottom. I just looked at the form as well. Birmingham, a bottom of the form table, 3 points from six games. Mm-hmm. This is all for the last six. Plymouth, they've only got 4 points. Huddersfield, 5. Millwall, 5. Swansea, 5. I mean, Millwall, they've not won in the last four games. And their fans are just thinking, I think one of their podcasts put a poll out, you know, are we going to get relegated? Yes or no? And yes was winning quite resoundingly. So they're, you know, they're panicking as well. And obviously, you can see why. I think we're not too much better. I think we're on 7 points. I think it is two wins and a draw from our last six games. So not, you know, not much better. But one thing that's quite telling when you're looking at the form table, obviously it doesn't match what the league table looks like, but it's very, very similar. As in, like, you know, teams that are down at the bottom, all these teams that we're looking at, are all doing shit. Like, you know, no, there's not really a team. Other than QPR, obviously, because they were doing all right, you know. But even then, QPR have only got two wins in the last six games. There isn't a team. I'm just looking now, including ourselves. You have to go up to 12th to find a team that's won more than two games in the last six, you know. Yeah. So when you're looking at that, I mean, Blackburn are obviously the draw specialists this season. Well, it seems like they're drawing every single week, certainly recently anyway. But, you know, when you look at it, it's a saving grace that there isn't really a team that's ran away with it. Like I said, QPR felt like that team, but it's very close, isn't it?
Agreed. No, I agree with you 100%. I think one of the things that you've just been said when you've reading all of that out, one of the things that I take away from that is that no matter how bad it's been, we have still been close to the top of that little table. And no matter how bad it's been over March, and, you know, I was thrilled to see the back of it, we've still been close to the top of that, irrespective of what's gone on. And if you can, and it is a big if you can take a over that kind of like halfway stretch over these next three games, you know, you beat Stoke and Blackburn, or you beat Norwich, and say you win two out of the next three, there is a high likelihood that teams like Millwall, who are again back in free fall, they had that new manager bounce under Neil Harris, and now they're one win in five, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they are dropping like a stone. I watched something of, I think it's their, one of their podcasts, I think it's Lions TV or something. And it was like an on the match reaction. And they were all, you know, we are going down. It's been so poor. We can't score goals. The new manager bounce has gone. I don't think Gary Rowett's had the desired effect at Birmingham City to stable the to steady the ship. I think they're in, you know, they're in real problem.
Yeah.
Plymouth, I know, beat Rotherham on Friday, but let's be honest, it's Rotherham.
Yeah,
there is some real poor teams. Stoke have had a bit of an upturn recently. Stoke have had a bit of an upturn. They were 2-0 down against West Brom, come back and won 2-2. Yeah. 2-2. By all accounts, speaking to, I know, you know, I've got a close friend of mine who's a West Brom fan. Stoke should have won yesterday. Stoke should have won, and they were unlucky to be 2-0 down. Aside from that, there is nobody really in that gap from, as you say, 23rd to 16th who is actually anything special. And it could just be that one side that has a huge positive feeling behind fan base, behind all the rest of it, that drives a team forward to, again, continue to overperform amongst the other sides. Because that is all you need to do now. You just need to better the other teams around you's results.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, look, I know obviously the next five games aren't going to go according to how the, you know, the previous six have gone. But if you just take the form in the last six, I know there's only five games to go, not six. We've picked 7 points up. We're level on points with Birmingham. They've picked up just three. So if it carries on, if it goes to form, that's 4 points that we could, you know, yeah. And we only need one to go ahead of one, because we're level on points. Huddersfield, we're a point behind them. Huddersfield, they've picked up five, we've picked up seven. So even with a goal difference, that's enough to go ahead of them. And that's it. That's the two teams that you need to beat, yeah. And we've done it. I mean, go even further, Millwall, they're 2 points ahead. Right, we'll be level on them because we've picked up 2 points more. Plymouth, they only picked 4 points up. We're on, like I said, seven. Oh, look, we'd go ahead of them as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's when you look at it like that, I think I asked how many points that people, you know, thought we'd get between now and the end of the season. And then someone's put, you know, that we're going to, if you read them all out, we're unbeaten, I think, in the last seven games of the season. Like, and I just think, like, come on. Like, let's be realistic. You can put a few defeats in there because that's what's probably going to happen. We're not going to go. I mean, look, we might do. You know, people will be clipping this and going, you said it wouldn't happen. But, you know, we might do. But realistically, it's not going to happen. I just hope that we get the points early. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I agree with you. I think it's seven that we'll take from the remaining five games. I think there'll be two wins and a draw in there. I think, I'll be honest, I know West Brom will be entrenched in the playoffs by the time that we play them. That might be the draw. That might be the draw. I can see two wins in there. I would like to think it's Stoke and Blackburn to keep sides around us, but it might not be. Those are the two logical ones on paper that you look at and think, right, those could be the ones, especially with Blackburn giving us, what, 7,000 fans or whatever it is going to Ewood Park. You know, that's a huge number and a big, big following. And we know from, I know it's a different realm, but like Milton Keynes, that level of fans and that number of fans makes a huge difference to the squad. It might be Stoke at home in a week's time or so that kind of gets that other win. We might be going into West Brom and Sunderland having those 7 points and being well out of it and feeling comfortable, and it's just nervous on the last two games, kind of watching the teams around you. But I agree with you, 100%. If it goes to form, and it is a big if it goes to form, we will creep out of it by the skin of our teeth. And that, to me, since Danny Roll has come in, feels just.
Yeah.
Compared to how all the other teams feel, and I know it's just a feeling, but how all the other teams feel, how they've performed over the course of a full season. I know a league table doesn't lie, but if you actually look at when we started to actually play football in this division mid-October, we have been and shouldn't have been in this position that we're in now, and it's only due to poor decisions that were made before.
Yeah, well, I think Danny Rill was speaking to, at his press conference, he got asked, you know, where would this rank if, you know, Wednesday get, stay up this season, where would it rank in terms of your achievements? And he said it would be the best one. I mean, understandably, because it's his first one being a manager as opposed to just being an assistant. But I think you mentioned, you know, no side has ever survived being so far adrift.
No.
You know, at whatever, you know, whatever stage of the season it was. So I think it was 13 points at one point, I think,
12 or 13. 12 or 13.
Yeah, it was.
I thought you could tell that at the end of the game yesterday, James. Like when he came over, like he let everybody go, like he always does. But at the end of the game, just before he approached the fans, he was stood off, looking at it, kind of scratching the back of his head. You could see the weight of it, kind of like almost the weight of that result lifting off him and seeing how important it is. And I think, honestly, I think that's why Wednesday fans have bought into him so much. It's not just because he come into an absolute shit situation. We've all bought into him so much because you can see how much it means to him.
Yeah, I feel like he kicked every single ball as well. He would be as knackered as some of them players. Do you know what I mean? At the end of that game, he'd probably need a cool down after. But yeah, oh, it's brilliant. Let's move on to Norwich then on Tuesday evening, the last midweek game of the season. David Wagner is their manager. I always want to say Daniel Farke. He was the manager, weren't he, at some point? Obviously, he's not at Leeds. I get them mixed up as well. Just like Jan Pavada and Paul Valentin, he nearly did it again then. They've just beat Ipswich on their derby that's not a derby, that is a derby. 1-0 at Carrow Road, it finished. They're, you know, decent form, four wins and two defeats in their last six. Obviously, they would have had all eyes on Saturday's game against Ipswich and probably forgot that they're even playing us on Tuesday. Yeah. Their away form is pretty shit, though. One win and two draws in the last six away, and we're three wins and two draws and only one defeat at home in the last six. Looks like we're not going to have Jan Pavada. Looks like that is going to be his season pretty much done. That's a huge blow, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, considering especially how tough Gassama found it when he was on at Norwich, when he was on the pitch at Norwich. He didn't get any change out of, I think it was Jack Stacey who he was up against. He didn't get any change out of him. I make no bones about it, Norwich away was a really difficult game for us. I don't think they played outstandingly, Norwich, but they scored two goals and it could have been more. Was that one of the ones where, did Norwich miss a penalty in that?
No. It's the one where Cadamartri got his nose all bloodied up.
But nose, yeah.
I felt like they were very wasteful in the first half. We went in at 1-1, but then I think they just kind of turned it up.
They scored almost straight from kickoff in the second half. It was like really early.
Yeah.
I mean, Pavada is a big miss because I think, again, against QPR, even though he's only on the pitch for half an hour, he settles you into that rhythm. He's a player who can go in behind, who always wants the ball. It is a different proposition with him not in the squad. Now, obviously, we're speaking like he's done for the remainder of the season. He might crop up on the bench because he's had his hamstrings strapped up or whatever. It is a huge game against Norwich. If you can get something against them, if you can get something, I know their away form's terrible, but they are still chasing the playoffs.
Yeah.
If you can get something from that game on Tuesday, fine. I think you have to move on from it. I know we need wins at this point of the season. I get that. But there are opportunities on the horizon to get that in Stoke, Blackburn and Sunderland. There are opportunities to get that. If you can take something from this game on Tuesday, that is a huge result and keeps that feel-good factor and keeps three games where you've got a positive result out of the last four going.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the other fixtures as well, I mean, they are split between Tuesday and Wednesday. Obviously, we're playing on Tuesday for once in quite a while. I always thought it was a thing that we just always played on a Wednesday for the midweek games, but that's obviously not a thing, certainly not this season anyway, because it is Tuesday night. Millwall have got Leicester, Millwall being the home side. Huddersfield have got to travel to Preston as well, and Plymouth take on QPR. So all the others don't play until Wednesday, so it is an opportunity to strike first, you know, and as much as the players will say, we don't look at it, you know, we don't look at the table, and it doesn't matter, lying. You are lying. Like, you know what I mean? You can't not, as a footballer, you cannot not find out, you know, that what's happened around you, because it's going to spur you on, isn't it? Like, let's be honest. Birmingham, they host Cardiff, and who's the other one? Swansea have got Stoke, and Bristol, Blackburn have to travel to Bristol City as well. So no real six pointers. Swansea, Stoke, but Swansea are pretty much out of it.
QPR maybe as well. QPR, Plymouth. Yeah, but I mean, again, QPR Plymouth, I would expect a QPR reaction there. And to be honest, I'd much rather have QPR have a reaction than Plymouth, because I think Plymouth, I mean, I watched them on Friday night. They were awful on Friday night. Yeah. They were absolutely terrible, and it's just a shame that Rotherham were so bad that they couldn't take any level of advantage from it. But you'd hope for a QPR reaction, because that just chucks Plymouth right in the mix again.
Yeah, it's just all up in the air again, isn't it? You know, it's almost like a lottery. You know, you're just picking out, oh yeah, they've won. There's nothing. As much as I've said, all the teams at the bottom are all doing shit at the moment. I mean, you look at it, all the teams from 17th downwards, I think pretty much every team bar Millwall and Stoke have won in the last two fixtures, yeah. at least one game. So, yeah, it's just
musical chairs, isn't it, down the bottom? I'm sure I said this last time I was on. It is musical chairs at the bottom of the league, and it is just when we run out of games, it's when the music stops, there'll be somebody who goes down. Yeah. I just really hope it's not us, because for once, I do think you can say this about Sheffield Wednesday. I don't actually think we deserve to go down. On the run that we've had since October this season, I don't think we deserve it compared to the other shite that's around us.
Yeah, I agree. There was a tweet saying who was going to be the manager of the season, and it didn't have Danny Rule in it. I know you can only pick four, but they picked out Cifuentes, the QPR manager. You're like thinking, if you picked him out, I know they're out of it at the moment, but only by 4 points. If you picked him out, then...
To borrow a classic Neil Warnock phrase, we're in London.
Yes, probably. Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right on that one. Go on then, give me a score prediction for Tuesday night then.
1-1.
Do you know what? Yeah, I would take that. If you said to me now, let's move on to Wednesday, it's 1-1. Got a point, yeah. I think it all comes down to the performance again as well for me.
Yeah.
If we see another level of performance... Go on.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Don't get me wrong, I would love 3 points, and my heart absolutely screams 2-0 Sheffield Wednesday, because Norwich's away form is poor.
Another 5-1. We've beaten 5-1 twice, Ills, haven't we, in recent years? Let's have another one. Dion Dublin, get him off Holmes on the hammer. Get him up front. Let's have another 5-1 and give him another send-off.
We all give him a standing ovation again and get him off the pitch.
I'd do anything for a 5-1, Matt. So Dion, if you're listening.
Another Atty Newey hat-trick as well. That'd be outstanding.
If we get wind that Dion Dublin's in the crowd, it's on. I'm telling you, it's on.
I'll tell you what, I'll chuck Holmes under the Amazon just before coming up, just see what happens. Yeah. But my heart obviously says 2-0. It'd be great if we went and did it, but I just know that's not really the reality. I do think that's down to we put an awful lot into that game on Saturday. I know we've sat here and said how shit QPR were and that we were really organised, but there was a lot of, you don't want to overstate this, there was a lot of emotional investment from kind of everybody on that squad, and that was a huge game and billed as a huge game by both your club captain coming out and saying we need to stop talking and just shut up and focus on this. That suggests that there was a level of focus and importance that was put on it within the camp that just perhaps hasn't been there before, because we haven't heard players coming out and saying that.
But you know what, I said this on the debate show midweek, that I feel like yes, there's 5 games left now, obviously there were 6 before, prior to this weekend. If you burn out in the last 2 games, so be it. But you could save yourself by giving 110% in these in the next 4, for example. You know, if you get to the end of it, like I said, and you've ran out of steam and it's just not been enough, but you've given it your all, and all I'm trying to say is I don't want players just saving themselves, because you can save yourself, and just because you save yourself doesn't mean that you're going to then win that next game. Go out, get the points early, go out and win that game, because even with, a 75% Barry Bannon on the last game of the season, could still be enough to do whatever we need to do. Or by that point, you might have won the next 4 games or 3 games and you're absolutely out of it, and it's not even a worry. Do you know what I mean?
Not 100%.
Just give it your all, is all I'm asking.
Yeah. 100%. I personally feel that this next fortnight is the biggest of is what will define our season, personally, just because of the games that we've got. We've got Norwich at home, which, yes, they're challenging for playoffs, but we've spoken about how shit they're away for.
And it's at home,
It's a winnable game. It's unrealistic, but it is potentially a winnable game. You've then got Stoke at home. That is a monumental 6-pointer. Absolutely huge. You have to win that. You have to win that. And then you get to Blackburn away, who, aside from a couple of positives results of late, they have been in absolute free fall. with a huge away backing, and there will be a huge away backing there, you win that game, you could go into West Brom and Sunderland in a driving seat position with a little bit of kind of, I don't want to say breathing room, but everybody else is looking up at you in the position that we've been in all season, chasing people, thinking, oh, we've gone and won, but we're still not out of it. Oh, we've gone and won, but we're still not out of it. The difference being we have been in that position all season, so this squad are comfortable to that. I can't imagine how nerve-wracking, say, Birmingham City, who haven't been in the bottom three really all season and have just dropped into it, having been in the playoffs up until mid-September, have just dropped into it and thought, shit, we're now in the bottom three. How do we get out of this? How do we get out of this? And like, we haven't been in this, or we haven't faced this kind of situation.
Well, don't ask us, because we've not got out of it either.
But that's it, isn't it? That next fortnight is the winnable games. This next fortnight is the winnable games. And starting on Tuesday night, I would take a point. Yes, I'd love three, but I would take a point on the caveat of, you have to then put the maximum effort into those next two games, because you beat those teams around you. You then go into West Brom and Sunderland with, I'm hoping here, and there's a lot of kind of like ifs and buts, with potentially a bit more of an advantageous position than sitting in 23rd.
You look at Blackburn as well. Before our game, they've got Bristol City, like I mentioned, away from home, and then they travel to Elland Road, which is not going to be easy either. So, no. You know, they could be playing us, having not picked up any points in the last two. I mean, they got a draw against Southampton, and they beat Sunderland 5-1, didn't they? But still, you know, it's we'll see. I don't think I've given a prediction for Tuesday. I'm going to say, go on, I'll be positive. I'm going to go for another 2-0 win. I think it's going to be similar to QPR. I'm going to, you know, we'll get a goal, we'll be holding on, and then they'll push everything forward, and then the two speedboats will shoot off, and we'll get a goal. Maybe Gassama will get the second goal this time. Right, we're going to wrap things up there. Matt, thank you very much. Do really appreciate it. Obviously, we're going to be talking on extra time. So if you want to listen to that, head over to patreon.com/WTIDpod. You obviously get all the extra episodes, and also the Discord chat, which obviously lots of chat on there. And also, get tickets off there as well sometimes if people's got spares, which certainly helped you out, didn't it, Matt?
Yeah, I was just going to say a massive shout out to both Josh and Harry, who catastrophic error of being in my job whilst tickets were released and having to actually do some work for once. So missed out on the releases and got saved by both Josh and Harry for yesterday, which was almost like everything lined up for a perfect day. So yeah, just a massive shout out to those two.
Yeah, nice one. We're going to be talking about, a few of the players that we've got to talk about, and also a bit on my day, how that panned out yesterday, being sat in the home end. So yeah, do join us there. Once again, patreon.com/WTIDpod, and we'll see you all on Wednesday on the debate show, live on Twitter, hopefully talking about a decent result at home against Norwich. Cheers, guys. See you then. Thank you.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.